started, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
Hey, man, what's your name?
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
It's a little nicer outside today.
Yeah, it is.
Well, at least for today. You know, I guess it's going to cool off a little more.
Depends on what you like rain. It's supposed to rain today, Earl.
I'll take rain. Oh. Over a bit of cold.
Yeah.
Right. By now, you ought to know that voice. It's Friday. That means it's Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I was not particularly as fond of the weather driving here as you were, but then I was I was in the thick of driving. So.
Well, it's kind of warm outside, yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, normal for this time of year, and that we're calling that warm.
I know, I'm eager to flood my ice rink, but we don't need to go. That's a different thing.
So, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, and I want to begin with this subject, Sandy, because yang?
How do you pronounce Y-E, right?
Yeah. Was it
yay?
Yay. Yay.
Is it a young E, a long E or something like that?
Yay. Just Y-E.
I know, but is that a...
Yeah, well, you're right. It's a mystery.
Yeah.
But, it is.
But his name is Kanye, right? So I suspect it's the yay from the end of Kanye.
Yeah. So it's whatever he wants it to be when the former $2 billion heir...
Yeah.
Who has... You know, can you imagine inside of 3 months, a guy who's worth over $2 billion...
Mm-hmm.
By having diarrhea at the mouth.
Well, I'll tell you what he does have is he has no filter. There's no filter between thoughts and mouth, that's for sure. He lost that. But, I mean, I feel some sympathy for you because he clearly, I believe, has some mental infirmities going. He demonstrates it periodically, I think. The divorce he had with the Kardashian was premised to some extent on the fact that he had mental difficulties. So, to me, people giving him the opportunity to make this unbelievable fool of himself, and fool, it's not quite a fool. It's more damaging than that, actually. They're giving him that opportunity, I think, to basically profit off of this poor guy's mental collapse.
You know, Sandy, he...
I mean, poor guy. That's an expression of empathy.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
And really, at the root of all of this is his disability that everybody knows that he has.
Well, I think it's a demonstration of the willingness of media generally to exploit celebrities. And they exploit celebrities and cloy after them when they're on the rise, and when they're on the fall, they can't give them enough attention so that they can have their collapse publicly. You know, it's so that the public can watch the train wreck, because the fact of the matter is, the public does like and responds by watching train wrecks, and there have been a number of celebrities who we've watched go down like that.
Well, this clearly is a train wreck. I saw a photo of him this morning when he was on the great, what's the guy's name, man? What's his name?
Did you say Alex Jones?
Alex. Speaking of train wrecks.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a junkyard.
Yeah.
When those two guys are, wow.
The fact that Alex Jones is still on the air, you know, I guess it's a testament to a guy still has some money. He still can kind of self-finance, because that's got to be how he's on the air, right? I mean, who else could? Alex Jones.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think what he's on. Is he on a YouTube network?
I don't have any idea.
But I think he has followers. I mean, the question is, if he still has millions of people who tune into him, then he still has money because advertising follows hits on the internet, and it's pretty indiscriminate about the reason for the hit in terms of that's the way it's been in the past.
So here. Alex Jones, a guy who has not learned his lesson. What would make a person, first off, what would make a guy, say what he said about those families?
Well, the Sandy Hook, that to me, I don't get it. It kind of worried me a little bit when, the whole people who ask questions like, did 9/11 ever happen?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, but he's...
It's not like that could have happened on a movie set like the notion that the moon landing was falsified. No, 9/11. Yeah, I know where the Financial Trade Center used to be, and I know what it looks like now. And so, yeah, it happened.
Well, Sandy, for an average person to say it, okay. But yeah. For people with the kind of power that he had,
yeah,
for them to say it, is really where you have to say, guy's not playing with a full deck. And so Alex Jones, they made him say uncle. He said he'd never, back up, but they made him. And now he's certainly realizing when you're on these microphones,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're on these microphones, right?
Except from someone like Alex Jones, it's a little bit like... Steve Bannon, the celebrity comes, or it's Roger Stone. The celebrity comes to them, regardless of whether the news media is covering them for positive or negative reasons. And undoubtedly, the name recognition of Alex Jones has gone up
of down. But his bank account has gone down.
The bank account, but he made that money quickly, and he'll make his next pile. If he goes bankrupt, he's in a position to make money again, I suppose.
So anyway, he had Ye on last night, and I don't know if it was Ye or not, because whoever this person was, he had on something completely black that covered his entire head, and so you could not even see his face. He had those same things on his hands. You've seen him cut.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So
does he dress like this frequently?
Yeah, yes. He's been dressing like this for the past year.
So this is like going incognito.
Well, he completely covers his entire face where you can't see his face at all, and so he's made a lot of money off of that. They call that a fashion.
Mm.
And apparently there are other people who follow that trend. They cover their entire faces, and
well, there's some people I would suggest that to, but I should never have said that.
No, you shouldn't. I shouldn't. I understand what you mean. Others may not, but they'll grapple with the understanding of what you just said. But Sandy, we're in the microphones.
I know.
but anyway, and so he's sitting there, and he's got on this bear coat in the studio. And you can see that this guy is, something's going on with this guy. But anyway, to make a long story short, he was talking about how great Hitler was. He created the highways, and he created, I forgot what else it was.
These are the great things that Hitler accomplished?
Yeah, created is what he was saying.
I see.
And he was saying to the Jewish people, well, see, there's good in everybody, and he said those things, and so right away, Elon Musk, who had just put him back on Twitter, said, "Whoa, wait a minute."
Well, wasn't Elon Musk's action as the result of some tweets that Ye put up on Twitter? I think it was.
Yeah, that plus this
other...
Well, to say Hitler was this great man, he created the highways, and see, everybody has good in him, and, so anyway, to make a long story short, by hearing all of that, Sandy, it made me think about censorship. You have many times on these airways said you're for freedom of speech across the board.
Well, I'm for freedom of speech, but it's like, as we were talking before we went on the air, it's a little more complicated issue. And freedom of speech and the First Amendment rights all relate to essentially government restrictions on speech. And private restrictions on speech are a different story and a different matter. And so...
So which one supersedes?
Well, private restrictions can be enforced with respect to speech unless it's an invidious kind of a restriction, on, for instance, in the workplace or someplace like that. I mean, but... The question is whether the medium that is being restricted is truly private or not. And so right now we've got an ongoing debate about whether the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of these things are privately owned enterprises in which the public participates. They're essentially set up to be bulletin boards for, that the public can access and use as their own bulletin boards. Okay, that was the magic. Facebook was one of the earliest ones. People realized, oh, we like having access to this bulletin board. We can broadcast out to our friends, or we can just broadcast out to the public.
Right.
And, okay, but then the owner of that bulletin board is making money not because of the fact that people are drawn, attention is drawn to this communal bulletin board mechanism. And so it's a private bulletin board in that it's run by a private business enterprise. A private business enterprise is making money off of the notoriety that that bulletin board has. And the more people that come to the bulletin board and look at it, the more money they make from advertising. So now you have a question as to whether this private entity is somehow connected to the speech that is being used in it, and whether it could be held liable by somebody else privately for what it is that's being said in this. So that if someone, for instance, commits slander or libel in Facebook about somebody else, is
Facebook liable?
Is
because
Facebook
that's the
liable
medium that's being used to spread it.
Exactly. So that, for instance, libel can be committed through by somebody saying something to a newspaper that is libelous of somebody else or slanderous of somebody else. The newspaper prints it. Now we've got two people who could be liable for it.
Hold the thought. We've got to go to a break. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. It's Friday, and that means Friday with Dave.
It's like Dave. Like Sandy.
Yeah.
So, like Kanye. So, yeah. Yeah, I am now Day.
He's officially Day.
Yeah.
That's the new term we're giving him, his new name.
How do you spell it? D-Y?
D-Y, yeah.
I think it's Die.
Die, okay.
Die. Yeah.
All right, so, it sounds pretty good for you.
Yeah, maybe.
Just calling Sandy Die.
Yeah, Sandy. Yeah. D. D.
D, okay.
What we were talking about.
Yeah, okay, so let me go here, because if you're just joining us, this really is a topic that is going to be presented, I guess, more and more as this thing, as more and more of these situations occur. They're going to have to be some stipulations, because for instance, Facebook used to show people being murdered on the site, right? I mean, They didn't stop that.
Right. So, I mean, what we were talking about before the break was I was trying to summarize the notion of, you were asking about First Amendment rights and censorship. And I think we all get confused about censorship that's carried out by a private entity with, you know, if you go to the Boston store, you can't start shouting, making a political speech there, and someone will come along and say, sir, I'm sorry, you have to leave the store.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And nobody thinks that isn't okay. You know?
Right.
So, but, and because it's a private place. I mean, it's a public place, but it's a private place of business. And the entity that's imposing this censorship is the store owner, and they're doing it for business reasons. And it is in fact a private place that is allowing the public to enter it.
So your First Amendment rights don't supersede the right of the business that you're impacting and affecting with what you think is your First Amendment right.
Well, your First Amendment right is your right vis-a-vis the government. The government
gives you your
right. No. The government can't tell you not to say that.
Okay.
But Boston Store can tell you not to say that. And you can choose whether you go to Boston Store or not. If you go to Lake Park and you start making a political speech, they can't come and say you can't talk like that in Lake Park.
Because the park is not owned.
It's a public place.
Right.
Okay. So the public can't constrain your speech for reasons other than the kind of constraints on speech that we've talked about. You can't shout fire in a crowded movie theater. You can't foment violence against some people standing over there in the corner. You know, you can't. There's some things you can't do that go beyond your First Amendment right to freedom of speech. But what we've got when we've got Facebook or Twitter or all these things are bulletin boards owned by private businesses. And the bulletin board is, however, open to the public. And the public can use the bulletin board to say what it wants to say, and the rest of the public is then able to look at it. And so then the question is, are these private bulletin boards entitled to restrict the speech that goes on within their bulletin boards? And they do that. That's what Elon Musk just did with respect to when Ye posted a swastika on Twitter, and then he otherwise demonstrated this kind of craziness. He's been constrained by Twitter not to do that. Now, the government couldn't tell someone not to post a swastika. That's not against the law. That would be a constraint of freedom of speech. It might be a demonstration of hate, and it could become a piece of evidence with respect to whether you're committing a hate crime, but they can't tell you that you can't wear it on your sleeve or whatever. That would be a public constraint. Private constraints? Yes, you can be privately constrained. So then the question is, and the First Amendment argument that's beginning to develop is Facebook or is Twitter or is Instagram such a big bulletin board that it's actually like the highway? It's actually like a public place. It might be owned privately, but it's open to everyone, and it is essentially a public place, such that a constraint on speech in that public place constitutes an infringement of their First Amendment. And the Supreme Court's going to have to leap quite a ways to decide that a private business owner who owns a bulletin board can't constrain that speech, because it's also possible that the owner of that bulletin board is going to be held liable for the slanderous statements that might occur on the bulletin board. And so they're entitled to say, you can't say that.
So from that perspective, Sandy, these laws, so to speak, are already there.
Which laws?
I mean, well, not laws.
The First Amendment?
So let me say this. So television and radio that superseded these entities that are coming, they already knew these things.
Well, the FCC.
Because they're owned by somebody, right?
Yes, they're owned by somebody, but the FCC, it is a public airway, and the FCC regulates them. And actually, the TVs are constrained by federal standards with respect to the content, because, you know, there's those 9 words you can't say.
Yeah.
You know, and you are entitled to say those things under the freedom of speech. The government can't tell you that you can't utter those words, but you can't do it over the public airways pursuant to the FCC restrictions because of a notion they had about the private aspect of the ownership of the stations over the public way, so that they were able to tell the owner of the private station, you've got to constrain speech and put it within certain norms, or else we'll do something to your license. They aren't, you know, they aren't going to do anything to the person who says it, but they might do something to the entity that owns the license who's allowing that speech on their media.
So this is going to be heard in the Supreme Court soon, right? You would say it's coming.
The Supreme Court will definitely hear cases associated with whether these entities are liable for... Okay.
Got to go to break. All right. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams, we'll be back. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, this whole discussion has layers to it. And, you know, the more we're on these sites, I think we just feel like we can just say or do whatever it is we want to say or do, because maybe you get away with it and early on, and you know, they can't monitor and police everything that's on the sites. I mean, how is it possible that somebody who's on, you know, Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is owns it can have the manpower to police everything that comes?
Well, that's one of the defenses that Mark Zuckerberg would raise to the note. Let's say that somebody says something libelous, slanderous.
Yeah, and they do it this morning.
And they do it on the internet, on the Facebook. And then someone sues them, and then also sues Facebook and says, look, this thing was published by you. It was published by you, Facebook, because it was posted on your public bulletin board. You published it, and so I'm going to sue you for libel too. And then, but Zuckerberg says, "Well, how can I possibly be held liable for the billions of words that are used on Facebook? How can I possibly manage that?" And so, however, it's possible that a court could decide that they should manage that. And so Facebook and Twitter and others have developed algorithms. You know, they have ways to sweep up megadata. They can have a computer that knows every word that is said on Facebook, you know, each word.
Right.
Because that's a pretty simple process if you have a big enough computing capacity. So then they should maybe have an algorithm that works backwards
from
the words that would alert them that this person is saying stuff. Who knows? This is something that is going to be litigated sometime. It hasn't been litigated to conclusion yet. So the question, but these are two different questions. Facebook can constrain speech that the government couldn't, okay? Facebook is not subject, at least now, to the restrictions on to the limitation on limiting speech that is the First Amendment. If the government was trying to restrict the speech on Facebook, that would be a First Amendment constraint. If the government was saying, you can't say this or that on Facebook, that would be a government constraint. If the government is saying to Facebook, you need to monitor the content on your bulletin board to make sure that it fits within reasonable social norms, like the FCC does with radio stations and TV stations, that has been allowed as a permissible action by government, because the government won't tell the person who's crossing that line on the radio or TV that you're in trouble, you can't say it. They're just going to talk to the license holder and say, you might lose your radio license if you have this kind of stuff being said over your airways. And it's usually not so much content as it is the question of essentially reasonable speech like swearing.
As complex as this subject is, Sandy,
yeah,
I'm patting myself on the back because I'm understanding what it is you're saying. I mean, as complex as it is, because it's sensical, right?
Yeah.
A lot of it is sensical.
It's common sense. If you begin to think of these things as public or private bulletin boards, and the ability of the government to restrain what's said on their own public bulletin board is different and is subject to First Amendment rights to speak as compared to what is said on a private bulletin board, where the owner of that bulletin board needs to protect itself potentially from being held liable libelous statements on it, and as well, they can maybe police it for the reason of just protecting the flow of money to it, so that if they allow all kinds of outlandish things to be said on one of these bulletin boards, private bulletin boards, and it turns people off so much that they stop using it, well, of course, that will shut down the revenue stream for that bulletin board, because they're all dependent on how many hits they have. So they can impose limitations on speech that might be premised strictly on whether it's going to screw up their business model or not. And maybe that's okay, because it's not the government restricting the speech. It's somebody who owns a private bulletin board. If you can't say it on Twitter, then go to one of these other bulletin boards and say it there. But there is also this growing legal question as to whether, if a bulletin board gets huge enough with billions of users, whether it hasn't become quasi-public in such a way that constraints on speech in this quasi-public arena violate freedoms of speech.
You know, Sandy, the last thing I'll ask you on this is there are, I guess, what would you call them? Some MAGAs who clearly say we want to be able to say whatever we want to say. It's freedom of speech, and they look at things that we need to get back to the First Amendment rights. Because I hear people talking about, well, I should be able to say whatever it is I want to say. That's what freedom of speech is all about.
Well, I would say that MAGA, many MAGA people, and many people generally, I'm not just going to use that term, misunderstand the Constitution, misunderstand the rights that it creates, turn them on their head. I would say that much of the freedom of religion discussion now, the protection of freedom of religion under the First Amendment as well, is being turned on its head, and it's being said, look, we don't have freedom of religion unless we can post the Ten Commandments at the county courthouse.
Right.
Okay. You know, 200 years ago, people would have said that's a government, that's putting religion into government, and that's impermissible.
Or, Sandy, one recently where at some schools, somebody could send the Ten Commandments on a...
That was in Texas.
In Texas.
They passed a law saying if it's donated, it has to be hung up there.
Yeah, and then so they said yes on that, and then somebody who challenged it in a different language.
Yeah, they sent it in Arabic.
Yeah, and they said, oh, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, so the you know, people talk about the Constitution broadly and want to declare that it allows them to do whatever it is that they're wanting to do, right? Freedom of speech basically is a discussion of the kind of constraints that can be imposed on speech by the government. If someone comes to my house and starts talking in a manner that I find offensive, I can tell them to leave my house.
Right.
Freedom of speech doesn't protect them from saying whatever it is they want to say to me in my house. If I meet them in Central Park in New York and they start telling me things that I find repugnant, but they don't threaten me physically or in any way cause me any harm, they're free to do that, and the government isn't going to restrict them from doing it. The only question is whether they're acting in a disorderly way, and the definitions of disorderly tend to have a definition that includes their effect on others.
You know, Sandy, we can clearly talk about this at infinitum. I see it's endless.
It's a semester's worth at least.
but what it is interesting. Because we know there are people who are going to have to invest some resources in fighting this battle. It's going to happen.
It's definitely going to happen. And it's why I said, and I have said, that I think that American restrictions are headed in a direction that's going to converge with Chinese restrictions. Because I have no doubt that there will be at least private censorship on the internet as the result, for the reasons I just described, that the people who own these private bulletin boards do care what's said on the bulletin boards and will constrain the speech that is on those bulletin boards. And to the extent that those bulletin boards are used for reasons that become dangerous to, in a public manner, fomenting riot, doing things that are more or less as if, you know, what you're doing on the internet seems like it's remote from everyone, but in some ways it's very intimate in the way it seems to be able to pull groups together. And for instance, ISIS found this out, did much of their recruiting over the internet. And everyone knew it. They could go to the sites and see where the recruiting was going on. What can we do about this?
You know, Sandy, we keep thinking that things are simplistic and absolute. You're an attorney. You know they're not. But the average American citizen thinks it's simplistic. Here's a prime example. Joe Biden just pulled off what many believe, you know, in stopping this rail strike. He couldn't do it alone.
No,
he didn't do it with only Democrats.
No, it was politically masterful.
Okay, so, but this is the same Joe Biden who's a big union guy, right?
Well, that's probably he was maybe the only person in a position to do something like this.
So here's what I'm saying. So I'm a union guy.
Yeah.
And I support unions. But I also know, that what would have happened had they gone on strike? I mean, you can be a guy who supports unions.
Right.
But you also say, hey, whoa, wait a minute. Do we know the outcome of what would have happened had they gone on strike?
Predictable. Many places, many jurisdictions have laws against public workers going on strike. There's a concept. There's a concept of strategic workers, right?
Law enforcement,
garbage workers,
right?
People who do strategic infrastructure. The workers there who are government employed, typically in most jurisdictions, are not permitted to go on strike as a matter of law. They can have unions. The unions negotiate.
The military.
Yep. And the military can't go on strike. We would never allow that. And so then the question really comes up, the railroad is very fundamental. And it's almost as if we had workers who kept the highways open and those workers threatened to shut down the highways, there would be very little dispute about whether the fact is we don't want that strike to happen.
Yeah.
Well, the railroad strike is somewhere kind of close to that. And it used to be much closer to that, you know, in 1900.
Right.
And in fact, the railroads were some of the earliest entities to experience labor
strife.
To experience the regulation of the labor situation by the government in the railroad sector.
Yeah, well, it was the way we moved.
It was everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it is a very vital resource. And so you have to look at it from that standpoint. And yes, this did upset the apple cart in terms of the balance of power in union negotiating, maybe. And that's what the strong unionists are arguing, that Biden shouldn't have done this. On the other hand, it is a very vital resource and a very vital strategic group of workers. And in a different day and age, strikes wouldn't have been allowed on that kind of a strategic resource at all. And so this is another one of those complicated things. And I think that in almost every respect, Joe Biden has saved the country a big problem. The labor settlement lacks the sick days that were wanted by the union. There is now legislation pending, and they're going to push for that. They didn't get all that they wanted out of this, but a strike that would have shut down the transport of goods on freight trains across the country would have had a horrific effect.
Especially in today's climate.
Yes. I mean, with shortages, with inflation, with the recession looming, it would have had a very dire effect. And the fact is that Labor unions tend to view the time when they have greatest leverage, like
now.
Right now, as the time to threaten strikes and to potentially go on strike, so that it's when they have the extreme leverage that puts the rest of the world in the most delicate situation that a strike might occur. So, you know, I personally kind of congratulate them. I did watch the votes on a number of these issues with some, I mean, I shook my head because, well, no, there was the vote on the sick leave. Issue.
Yeah.
And 25%. Rubio and Cruz and others voted on the union side of that, which was clearly designed to just put a pointy stick in the Democrats and Joe Biden's eye, because they knew that wasn't going to pass. So they voted for it. When it came time to vote the other way on approving the settlement, they voted against that.
So, Sandy, as they talk about this bumpkin, this guy who you hear from the Republicans is doesn't know whether it's morning or night, you know, can barely walk, can't think, is way out of a paper bag. Doesn't know. Joe Biden's been pretty kind of effective for a guy who has been totally dismissed by people on the right and some on the left. He's getting some stuff done.
Well,
hold the thought. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. This Friday's with Sandy Williams. We'll be right now. But really, Sandy. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. This Friday's with Sandy Williams. I don't listen to the people. Express yourself. Express yourself. hey, Connor knows what he's doing. You know, he doesn't luck up on it. Welcome back, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. You know, Sandy, Joe Biden stops a railroad strike. He picks the economy over unions. Why not do the same for families is what this article is saying. Now, well, it's not that he picked the economy over the unions. Families were going to be impacted and affected had this strike gone through. I mean, the economy, yes, but all the people along the way and their families were going to be impacted.
Yeah, I would say that right now our economy is like a game of Jenga. And and you know, when we're pretty far into the game, and it's
inevitable, that
it's teetering. Yeah. And I think he and every economist knows that a rail strike would have clearly been probably the last thunderclap in the perfect storm that would have taken us maybe into a recession and maybe a deep one, because it would come on top of a bunch of other issues, and it would have a short term but devastating effect. They got a 24%+ increase in wages,
yes,
out of this. I don't know whether they had a COLA. My guess is they did.
Yes.
In their
they
wage
strong
scale.
Union. You know they did.
So, you know, this is a pretty positive wage settlement. They didn't get the sick days or personal days that they might have wanted. But I think they were chasing 8 days, which is probably a 3% increase in payroll. So that would have been, three on top of the 24, 25 they got, which have been an overall 28% increase in payroll costs. So, because you have to add, as you were saying, you have to add employees if you have more off days. You have to cover for that. But, you know, it's hard. These are hardworking people. So I'm glad they're getting what they want. I think labor needs to use this time of seeming inflation to get the wages readjusted as they should be into the norm of what it takes to have a good, solid working wage. Railroad workers do have working wages.
No question.
Yeah.
And they have for some time. They've got one of the strongest unions that there is. But here's what I would say is it shows, on the one hand, the value of unions. and the organization and being organized. Because if there were more unions, you know, then people wouldn't still be making $10 an hour or $9 an hour at fast food places.
Well, I think also it shows the benefit of bipartisan processes. Yes. And having someone like Joe Biden in office who is trusted by and is viewed as and is continuing. Even the union bosses or people who are criticizing him start out their criticism by saying, Joe Biden is the most pro-union person we could have in office, but, and then they want to criticize this particular bill. But they're saying that because they do know and they understand that Biden did what he needed to do for the country, number one. Number two, if this had been Trump in office and he had tried to do the same thing, every Democrat and every union person would have opposed it bitterly, and we would have had a different outcome because, quite frankly, Biden has a good deal of credibility that he was able to. He had political chips that he could deploy, and to his credit, some politicians never want to spend their chips. He spent some political chips here. This is costing him something with respect to labor support out there broadly.
No question.
But he spent those chips. He did it for the country, and I have to say I congratulate him.
Well, and I got to, you know, Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden brokered this deal, and Mitch McConnell was able to convince some Republicans along the way. Because let's be honest, Sandy, these are not just Democratic areas that would have been impacted and affected. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, the economy was going to be affected. And whether you're a Republican or not, where you live and the people that you represent, we're also going to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably, of all the things that have passed, this is much more a bipartisan accomplishment than the infrastructure bill. Infrastructure's pork, okay?
Right.
It was pretty easy. You know, we all congratulated ourselves, but it was just pork for every congressional district in the country and more. This was actually quite artistically done, I think, and to see McConnell and Biden working together to accomplish something like this, Biden using probably more political chips than McConnell did in order to accomplish this, was pretty impressive.
You know, Sandy, I for one am one of those people who you know, says government's not working. Broad statements sometimes. In this instance, government worked, right?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, I think the issue really that's interesting is the conservatives are against government regulation anywhere and everywhere. But incidentally, this is an aspect of government regulation. You know, the FTX collapse, that cryptocurrency exchange collapse. Now the great deal of people on the right are saying there should be more government regulation, okay? And the fact is that government regulation is exceedingly important to have a market-driven economy work. There needs to be effective government regulation to keep things clean at this, like the securities level, to make things trustworthy in the whole financial markets. Our government regulation is what creates the sanctity and the great draw of the U.S. financial markets, because they are to be trusted because of the effective regulation. And this is an example. I would just point this out to those on the justices on the Supreme Court who are thinking and talking about the post-administrative world, of the, you know, this anti-regulation world. Regulation's important.
Yeah, well, and especially for the American people. The regulations are to make sure that the people are safe, right? I mean, the regulations aren't for the corporations. They're for the little guy, to make sure that the little guy is not taken advantage of totally.
But regulation can be win-win. For instance, FDA regulation. If the FDA effectively regulates food, then the little guy can trust the food that he buys in the supermarket, because it's all passed the test of the FDA. If the FDA starts failing the test of doing adequate regulation, we're all going to be worried about what we buy. So it'll hurt the businesses that sell food just as much. Well, our airplanes. We all know what happened when the FAA fell down on its regulation of Boeing. Boeing's going to experience serious problems financially.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.